Going live. Hello. Hello, especially hello to all those people on the replay who are actually here. Of course, the live audience might not turn up at all. Let's hope they do, but the replay people are here, so that's jolly good. Good morning, good morning, good morning. And I'm super excited. You know I'm super excited because I'm here at 11 o'clock on the dot because we've got the interview with Jenku that I am super, super pleased. And I can't wait. I do hope that it turns up. So I'm just going to, if you'll just bear with me. Good morning, Carol. Good morning, Heather. So I'm just going to bob over to our Facebook chat, which you probably won't be able to see, and get onto my messages and find out if Jenku's in the room. Hello, are you there? This is going to be a fantastic interview. I'm so excited, I can't tell you. So there we are. I'm going to, good morning. Oh, lots of, there we are. Good morning, good morning, good morning. Chris, Shader, Siobhan, Shona, Yvonne, hello. All right, let's see if we can find and go straight to our guest, if we possibly can. Okay. Please click on this link when you are ready to join the broadcast. There we go. So that's marvelous. Hello, everybody online. Welcome to my home once again. It's been a good week actually, because we had the first rider confidence course yesterday, so we're starting to invite people back for real. Not that you're not real, but not on the online kind of thing. So that was super. We had a really nice rider confidence session yesterday. I only made a little bit, which is good, and we got talking, and one of the clients was saying that she gives herself such a hard time. So I'm always saying that other people's opinions are not a good idea, and don't listen to other people's opinions, that they're trying to build their own status, and there we are. I'm always going on about other people. But I don't always go on too much about how much of a hard time you just give yourself, even when other people are being supportive. So I'm just going to address that now, because that's the conversation that came up. And she was saying that she goes to a competition, and if she does less well than she thought, she gives herself a really hard time. Whereupon I said, well, you don't have to give yourself a really hard time. That's a choice. When somebody else is saying something to you, that's something that you can't control. And then you have to have strategies in to deflect that. I get it all the time on this broadcast, on this show, on the content that I put out, on my book, on everything. I can't control what people say. And there we go. You have to employ strategies to deal with it. But when you're saying it to yourself, you could choose not to right now. And this lovely lady looked at me and she was like, but I can't help it. I can't help it. I just get so cross with myself. And the example from other parts of life, if you have a small child that comes to visit and knocks over something and breaks it, your first instinct is to go, oh, that was from my grandma, you've broken it now. But then almost instantly, a little voice comes in and goes, it's only a kid. Where's it going to get you? It's not going to get you anywhere. The toddler. And you've spoken, and B, it's not going to help. Well, if you have that ability to have a go at someone and then actually think, that's going to cause damage, then you have an ability to be about to have a go at someone and then think that's going to cause damage, even if that person's you. So at any time, you can simply choose not to be hard on yourself. So if you are one of those people who gives themselves a hard time, even if they're surrounded by supportive people, you don't have to be. You've already got those skills. Okay, let's bob over to Facebook, get this interview on the road. All ready when you are. Okay. Lovely. Okay, lovely. We've got 46 people. I've just sent a message through to Jenku. Hopefully, he'll be joining us now. Where are you? Where are you? The wonders of technology. Okay. Oh, marvelous. Here we go. Ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, open the curtains from backstage, resting in the green room. He's here. Ladies and gentlemen, Jenku. Where are you, Jenku?
I am.
Where are you?
Durban at the moment.
There we are. Welcome, welcome to windy England.
Hey, thank you from sunny South Africa.
Thank you so much for joining the Social Distance Social Club. This has been running now since lockdown started. I'm really enjoying it, and I am absolutely honoured and delighted that you've decided to come on this morning. Thank you very much indeed. Super.
Thank you very much, Carl. Thank you for having me.
So for anybody in my audience who doesn't know what you do, would you like to introduce yourself and a brief outline of your work with horses?
Yes, yeah. So I train worldwide and I travel quite a lot. And I train, specialize in hand. And my method I developed over a 30-year period. And the intention is to train with the end user in mind. And the end user is not the human. It's actually the horse. So I've designed the entire system around how a horse's brain connects with its body. So literally from the inside out rather than from the inside, from the outside in.
So what, so how much in a percentage wise, how much is you training the rider? How much is you training the horse?
Oh, now that is a good question. I would venture to say that if we train, it's mainly the rider that has to interpret, because ultimately the rider is actually the programmer of the horse's brain. It's like, so if the rider understands how the technology works, then it's they have to program the brain ultimately. So percentage wise, most probably 70% for the human. And only 30% for the horse, because the whole intention is to have the horse in the middle, but then everything that we do is considering how the horse's perception works and how the horse understands and learns. And so the humans ultimately have to make the biggest, they have to work the hardest. They say when this thing really works, it's the human that works the hardest, not the horse.
And you came to England not so long ago.
Yes, yeah, I was there the end of last year, the last time, and then unfortunately lockdown happened. So I had to cancel my March clinics and I had to turn around and come back. But I am very excited, would like to come back. There's lots of interest in England and I love working in England. Your country is beautiful when the sun shines.
It is when the sun shines. So let's, if you don't mind, can we go back to the beginning? Where did you grow up? What was your introduction to horses? What sort of family did you come from?
So a very interesting thing, a little short story is that how this started for me is like when I was 7 years old, we used to travel to my grand's farm every second weekend, and it was about 300 kilometers away from where we lived. And halfway there, there was a picnic spot that we used to stop over and have some sandwiches on a Friday afternoon. And this specific Friday afternoon, a donkey strolled up to us. And I said to my dad, I want to ride this donkey. My dad said to me, you don't even know if this donkey is rideable. And I said to him, I'm sure that if it hangs around with us and it wants to eat our sandwiches, it must be tame. So my dad did what I asked, and he popped me onto the donkey's back and stood back with his camera to take a photograph. And the donkey literally just walked 5 steps and then bucked me off into a barbed wire fence. So I was hooked for life. And then I used to ride once a year with my cousin and them. And
is this all in South Africa?
That's all in South Africa, yes. Yeah, so I used to ride then after that once a year with my cousin on their farm. But every time we would go out, it's about a 5 kilometer out ride, going to the river and then ride around by the river and then turn around and come back. But every time we turned around and went home, the horses bolted with us. And okay. So that was my introduction into horse riding. And then I joined the police in 1990. And I did a failure apprenticeship from 1991 to 1994, and then left the police and then started breaking and training horses privately here in South Africa. And then it just slowly developed over time. As I learned skills. There was lots of interesting things that happened to me on my journey. But yes, that's quite a long story.
I have quite a lot of interactions with the Metropolitan Mounted Police. Either they're coming to my place for entertainment and to do some courses, to do some horse archery or some sports or whatever. So then after doing the police, what's the link between, how did you start your training regime? Because you're quite unique in the way that you train horses. Would you like to explain? I've been watching your YouTube videos, so I know exactly what I'm talking about.
That's very cool. Thank you. I appreciate that you've done some research. So interesting thing, when I left the police, I was all on my own. And one thinks that you know how to do it, but we had manpower when I was in the police, and there was a group of people when we were breaking horses in. So I literally suddenly found myself all on my own, and I had to figure it out because there wasn't really a lot of books. And I also have to say, this was before the internet. So this is 25 years ago. There was no internet. I didn't really have access to books. I was living in quite a small town. And if I heard of someone that had a technique, I would literally travel to them and go and spend a weekend or a week with them and try and just find out what is their method all about and then come back and implement it. So it was an interesting journey. But to go and literally just try something. So the philosophy of just try something, fail at it, learn from it, improve on it, and then repeat. So I was running the same cycle over and over again. Every horse that I got, I was making marginal improvements on the method and then trying something else. So if I heard of something new, I would try it. And at some stage, I think it was in about 97, one of my mentors gave me a whole box of Western Horseman magazines, and that was the first time that I actually was introduced to natural horsemanship. So, and then it wasn't even called natural horsemanship. So I started reading an article of Buck Bannerman, and it was very funny because I saw that he lassoed a horse from another horse's back, and then he proceeded to rub the horse's back while he was sitting up on his horse with a lasso, and the horse was standing quite nicely. So eventually he got off his horse, he took his saddle and bridle off his horse, led his horse out of the round pen, and then he proceeded to put the nunna and the saddle onto this horse that he has just lassoed, and he let it go and it bucked a little bit, and then after it finished bucking, he got on the horse. So I thought to myself, I want to try this. So the next morning I went, there was a horse that I had literally got on the day before for the first time. I thought, I'm going to try this out. So I did the same thing. Didn't have it as soon as I caught the horse, rubbed it with the nunna, put the saddle on, did the girth up, got on the, before I got on, I took the halter off, got on the horse, and the horse started walking with me. So that was all fine for about 10 minutes. And then I started thinking, like, wonder how he steered this horse, because I can't recall that I've read that in the article. And so I sat there for another 5 minutes, and I thought, I actually wonder how he stopped the horse, because I can also not recall how he did I thought I was going to try and just get off. So as I leant, the horse saw me and it started trotting. So fortunately, it didn't buck, but it was trotting with me on its back. So I decided to just sit there and not get in its way, and then sitting trot. So about, I think, half an hour into this ordeal, the horse is now trotting around with me, and it was a fairly small circle. It was 15 meters in diameter. It was going around and around. Eventually, it was quite nauseous. So I thought, I'm going to have to pull myself off the horse's back. So I reached for one of the uprights, and when the horse saw my hand, it went into canter. So we were now cantering around this 15-meter ring. And so I was eventually going, I can't take this anymore. And the closest farmhouse was about 2.5 kilometers away, so I couldn't even shout for someone to come and help.
Yeah.
So eventually I decided to bail, and as I bailed, the horse bucked, and I landed really hard. And so I was winded, and this horse is bucking around me in the circle. I was thinking, oh, I hope he doesn't jump on me. So eventually, it's like I got my breath back, got back up on my feet, stopped him, and got the saddle off him. And that night I went back and I looked at the article, and at the bottom of the page, it says continued on page 67, because I had fallen asleep and pushed the magazine on my face. So on page 67, it said, these horses were used as pack horses for 2 years prior, and they were used to being tied nose to tail. So they were used to having things on their back, and they were very good at leading. And so they were quite steerable, and they obviously knew how to come back to a standstill. And I went without reading the whole article and just tired.
A little knowledge is a dangerous thing, apparently. So if you kept, what I'm fascinated by, if you came out of the police and you were a farrier, and then you're going and finding various people who've trained horses, that takes a certain humility of character, because you could easily have been one of these chaps that come out going, I've done riots, I know how to deal with a horse, I'm a registered farrier, you can't tell me nothing.
Well, I think my dad was the one that has always said to me, it's like, if you don't know that you don't know, then you don't know. But if you know that you know, then you have no excuse. So it's always been very important to me, because of the way that my dad brought this up, is to be open-minded and not to get my ego, to keep my ego out of it.
And which is very prevalent in the horse world. People are clamoring for horsey status and tripping themselves up in their own desire to be knowledgeable about horses. And I'm always admiring of people who, especially if they've got a background of horses and are still willing to learn, it's just super.
Yeah, so it's literally like, for me, it's like, and I think I'm sure you've heard this before, it's like, the more I think I know, the more I realize how little I know. So it's really been an interesting journey. It's like, even as we stand and talk here, it's like I'm constantly reading new things and research. And I think the biggest challenge, and that's why I say, is like that we have to design our training programs with the end user in mind. It's like, because there's so much research that's taking place, but unfortunately the scientists speak a very highfalutin language, and that language does not filter down to the rider that is actually in the arena. And so there's all this beautiful science, but as long as there's science and people, there's a disconnect between the people who's physically training the horse and the real world. All the research in the world is not actually helping us. And so it's been very important to me to try and join the two worlds, because we live in an age, it's amazing to think, not even 10 years ago, we were not able to do video calls. Look at the technology that we have.
Yes. It's amazing. So, I've been looking over your online course as well. And anybody out there, Jenku's a horse trainer, I'm a rider trainer, both very physical businesses. What I've been doing Jenku during lockdown is trying to encourage people to get an internet side to their business, because yes, we all got locked down, and my internet side is probably only 10%. I'm still a bricks and mortar business, but yeah, it has been good. And I'll just say again to the audience, if anybody would like to get some advice off me, from I'm no expert, but I know what I've done, and I know how I built my internet site. So anybody out there who's like, well, I'm a physical worker and can't, you know, it doesn't translate to the internet, in some way it will. And for your own security, I've gone completely off subject, do excuse me, for your own security, investigate getting an internet side to your business, because it's really been worth it in this lockdown.
Definitely. I think, and it's very interesting to the technology is definitely, yeah.
But you're doing a lot you do a lot of filming though, don't you?
Yes, yeah. So I used to literally stand with my phone in my hand as I do lessons. So I would venture to say I video about 50% of my lesson, and all of those videos I download onto a hard drive. And then people keep asking me, what are you going to do with the videos? And I said, one day when I retire, maybe I'll have an opportunity to edit it. And so it has eventually got up to, I think I've got 12 terabytes worth of video footage on hard drives. And fortunately, I met Tracy, and Tracy said to me, we did a clinic together, or I did a clinic at her yard, and she said to me, she's going to put a little video clip together, and she'll send it on to me. And I thought, yeah, I've heard that before. It's like, and then you never see it again. Within 24 hours from finishing the clinic, I had a video clip, and there was sound, it was edited, and I was impressed. So I picked up the phone and I said to her, I need to talk to you. And so she said, what about? And I said, I've been looking for someone like you who literally just acts on what they say, that doesn't just talk. And so we started at the beginning of last year, we decided, because she has four horses, we decided to take the journey and break it up into four separate categories. But in effect, it's actually, the intention was to do it just for, you do all four journeys with one horse. But because she had four horses, we decided, okay, we'll do one, the desensitization.
Right, yeah. So you're literally following the whole training using your method of these four horses. Would you, I would say that my three biggest issues with my riders is constantly thinking about the what ifs. I'm a rider confidence coach, so I don't teach horse riding. You could do Western riding, you could do classical, you could do hunt, whatever your discipline is up to you. But when your instructor says to you, sit up, put your leg on or whatever, that's where I've come in to give you the confidence to do that. Yes. So my three biggest issues that riders suffer from is, firstly, I would say it's what if. Thinking, what if I fall off? What if this happens? What if the horse bolts? What if? And that's a big issue. I get that asked mostly. Secondly, I'd say it's cantering issues, transitions into canter, transitions out of canter, how to not feel frightened at canter. And thirdly, the third biggest issue I would say was other people's opinions. Thinking that somebody's watching you, coping with criticism, remaining positive when onlookers might not have your best interests at heart, because they want to tell you their fears and then that infects you, or they want to criticize you or whatever. I would say that's, firstly, what if? Secondly, cantering. And third, other people's opinions. I might swap round cantering and other people's opinions, because other people's opinions is really bad. My question to you and your training, what are your three recurring major topics that you have with horses or riders or anything to do with your work?
I think one of the biggest things now lately is for people that have worked really long and really hard to get to the top, to the pinnacle. So the three pinnacles are Piaf, Passage, Canterbury-Wet, the three pinnacles of dressage. And they've put the time and the effort and they thought that they were doing the right thing. They're following the instructions, they're practicing, they're putting the hours and the mileage, and after however many years, they still feel as if it's like Mount Everest, the peak is still just out of their reach.
And because so, the horse isn't doing it, or it isn't doing it very nicely, or the instructions are coming from the outside, which is where you started, rather than from the inside of the horse. Clarify that a bit.
So what is interesting is that if a horse obviously has the talent, you literally can sit on the horse and almost just push the buttons and it happens all by itself. Yeah. So a horse that's got the talents, it's not too difficult. It's like those horses are, in a way, it's quite easy to drive them or ride them because they're intuitive. They're like a car that has got power steering and it's got intuition. It's got an onboard computer. It's like, but if the horse doesn't have that, then I think this is where I come into the picture. It's like to help close the gap. And often I think that is just the lack of ability to give direct and accurate feedback, and then to link into what you're saying as well, is like there's fear of failure. So that's a very interesting thing.
Let me just interject. The direct feedback, is that coming from you as an instructor or from the horse and they're not reading it?
So between the horse and the rider, there's like a disconnect. And then ultimately, it's like, so this is like what do they call it? A three-way love triangle. It's like there's an instructor, there's a person, a rider, and there's a horse. And ultimately, it's like if the instructor can keep their verbal input simple so that they don't mentally overwhelm the rider who's trying to stay in balance, stay connected with the... So they're trying to listen to our instructions and they're trying to communicate with the horse. So maybe to give you a very practical example, I often see riders looking down like this when they ride. And something that I've learned over the years is that this is called eye accessing cues. So effectively, if you watch a really good actor, when they are very good at acting, they use their eyes really well. It's like, and when they act, makes you really believe. Anthony Hopkins is a very good example of someone who really, when he cries, he really makes you believe that he is sad. He doesn't just cry tears, but there's no real feeling behind it, because he's really able to manipulate his eyes. So one of the things that happens is kinesthetic people, and I think something like 60% of all females are kinesthetics, so they will want to look down into their body to connect their brain with the feeling. And if the instructor keeps telling them to look up, they're effectively disconnecting from how it feels in their body, and they're trying to now visually make sense of something, but it's not a visual thing to ride a horse. For the instructor, it's a visual. So you're standing on the ground looking and you're giving visual cues to say, do this, more leg, more this. The rider is trying to kinesthetically connect with their body. And so already there is a disconnect. So it's almost like we're talking two different languages. It's like a Microsoft and Apple that doesn't want to communicate because it's got two operating systems. It's like, so first of all, it's very important that the instructor and the rider uses the language that causes the least amount of stress for the rider.
Yes.
And then for the rider to communicate in a language that causes the least amount of stress for the horse. Because then we have, we close this loop between the instructor, the rider, and the horse, and then we get direct and accurate feedback, and then there's no fear of failures. Like, so then we close, then we go into a positive feedback loop rather than into a negative feedback loop where things keep going wrong. And ultimately, if it goes wrong for the horse goes into their feeling brain, into their, into the reptilian brain, and then they go into flight mode. And so when the horse goes, if the horse goes flighty, it's like the rider goes flighty, it's like, and so then they caught up in a vicious feedback loop with each other. It's like, so the person's stress hormones are up, the horse's stress hormones are up, it's like, and there's no learning that happens when the horse is in fight or flight and or the rider's in fight or flight. So it's very important to me to help them into a calm, relaxed state, because that's where the optimum learning takes place.
So is this the most common, when you've got a new client and they come down and they show you what they've been working on, the PF or whatever, is yes. it usually the same mistakes? What I'm asking is there a fault in the traditional way of teaching these things that people have picked up on? As in, yes. it's from the outside.
Yes. So if, like, maybe I'll explain it in this way. It's like there's something that I call the invisible box. And the invisible box is literally created by your bit, your reins, and your leg. So when you look from a bird's eye view, it literally creates a rectangle around your horse's head, neck, and shoulders. And in the rider's mind, we think that because we're sitting on the horse, we move with the horse. But in the horse's mind, the horse is literally caught up in this invisible box. And this invisible box moves with the rider. So the horse is constantly trying to find neutral in the middle of this invisible box as it moves. And so horses by nature are claustrophobic animals. And if they get claustrophobic, they go into opposition reflex. So they start pushing on this box to try and either get it to expand or they're trying to get out of it. And the more the horse pushes on the box, the more the rider closes the box up. And we normally, we put a stronger bit in the horse's mouth, we put stronger spurs on. So it is in our nature to try and control it more with our thinking brain. And then we keep triggering the horse's fight or flight instinct because we keep putting it into this invisible box and containing it. So can you see how the negative feedback loop?
I can. I'm super curious as to what you're going to do to start this going on a different path, because I know exactly what you mean. The temptation to control just leads to a raising of anxiety. And it, oh, he's gone. Has he gone? Have I gone? What's going on? Are you back again?
Sorry, I think there was a dip in the signal, yes.
Yeah, so as you attempt to get the horse, even to get the horse to calm down, you're attempting to just slow it and slow it, but instead of calming down, you're just raising the anxiety because you're containing it more and more and more, and everything's going up, up, up. What do we do, Jenku?
Oh, first of all, we get off the horse.
Okay.
So I think what is very interesting is, like, if you think of this, when you're sitting on the horse, effectively you are on all four sides of the horse at the same time. Does that make sense?
Yes, yes.
So I'm going to explain this from the ground a little bit, because then it'll make more sense. So the horse, like a human, have got two brain hemispheres. So we've got right brain hemisphere, left brain hemisphere, and the brain is contralateral. So in other words, the left brain hemisphere controls everything on the right half of our body. And the right brain hemisphere controls, and I think the screen reverses it, so it looks very funny.
I get super confused when I'm trying to do something with my hands.
Yeah. So that's very funny. So the brain basically works across. It's like, so left brain hemisphere controls the right body half, and the right brain hemisphere controls the left body half. So normally what we do when we train the horses is most horses are left-handed. Most human, 90% of humans are right-handed. So when we lead them, we are leading them from the left-hand side, because we put them on our confidence side and they put us on their confidence side. So now a very interesting experiment is, like, if you are right-handed, if you from now on start brushing your teeth with your left hand in the evenings and with your right hand in the mornings, just to get some idea of how uncoordinated it feels for the horse when we go on their right-hand side. So no one leads the horse from the right-hand side. So the horse gets very little input. And so they never really develop the coordination and, more importantly, the confidence on their right-hand side. So when I was breaking and training young horses, I would sometimes get on the horse on the left-hand side and the horse on the left-hand side, because when you get on, the left eye sees you with on the left hand. So basically the horse sees the left half of your body on the left hand side and the right half of your body on the right hand side. So in the horse's mind, there's two people sitting on its back. On the left hand side, there's a very friendly person sitting, okay. But on the right hand side, it's a very scary person.
Okay.
So because if you look at the ears, there's something that's called ear radar. So when you, wherever the ear is pointing, is where the eye on the same side is looking. So it's like a chameleon.
So I've seen
the eyes actually do this.
I've seen on your YouTube videos teaching PF on the ground, and it's quite fundamental to your training, is it not? Would you then do that from both sides?
Very much. So normally what we do is I encourage my clients to do it on their coordinated side. We train the PF as far as we can up the ladders, like on our confidence side. But then when we change rein and we go to the right-hand side, we go back to just doing hock flexions, for instance. So we're putting ourselves in that position where we're brushing with our teeth with the long hand. And to develop, so we're developing the coordination, but we don't push it ever outside the limit between the challenge versus the skill. It's like, so it works like a toilet seat. So if this is the challenge and this is the skill, what we're looking for is a 45 degree angle. It's like, so somewhere here, if we go too high up towards the challenge, we start stressing the horse.
Yeah.
If we go too low down here, it becomes boring. So we're looking for somewhere here in the middle. This is where flow happens.
Yeah, so I have a traffic light system rather than a toilet seat, but it's the same principle.
So, get some message across there. I like that idea of a traffic light better.
So, once we've got the what is the object? Once you've got the horse PFing nicely on the ground,
yes.
Is this to get rid of that invisible box, or are you going to use the invisible box to get?
So there's a very nice question. Is it coming back to the explanation? Is it what we're effectively doing is when we're doing the groundwork, as we're standing, you can only be on one side of the horse at any given time. So if you train from the left, you're effectively only stimulating one brain half. If you train on the right, you're only stimulating one brain half. And if you train the coordination, to maybe give you a very practical example, imagine that I ask you to write a paragraph with your left hand if you are right-handed, and you go, it's really difficult. And I say, but what if I pay you £100? People go, oh, of course I'll try and write with my left hand.
Try a bit harder.
Yeah, we will, definitely, when we incentivize the person. But now imagine I give you two clipboards and I ask you to write simultaneously with your left and your right hand. And you're not allowed to scribble with your left hand. You must write legibly. So when we get on the horse, effectively, when you're on both sides, you're like asking the horse to be ambidextrous. But the right-hand side is not as coordinated as the left-hand side is. And so that side's constantly trying to play catch-up. And so the horse gets quite stressed, especially on the right-hand side. In the beginning, obviously they get used to it over time, but we need to open up neurological pathways for the horse to PF evenly, because it's even a physical thing. So it's very interesting to see most horses engage their left hind leg more, and they push with their right hind leg out behind them better. So they push with the right hind leg, they engage with the left hind leg. So what we do in our training, when we do the shoulder in, for instance, on the right rein, is to encourage the right hind leg to go to the same, as far forward and under, as to the deepest part of the saddle where the rider's weight will be, because we are now trying to help the horse to straighten itself out. So the right hind leg has to learn to engage more, and the left hind leg has to learn to push more. So once we've built all these things in on the ground and we've worked with the two independent brain halves, only then do we get back on top. And normally by then, the riders develop their own dexterity on their not so coordinated side. And then things start making much more sense. And we seem to make better progress, because the rider, for one, is sitting much quieter. And then the invisible box is literally created then from your elbows. If you think about the rein starting from your elbow to the bit on both reins, I call it Lego Man arms. So when you lift your forearms up and you put your elbows down, you are effectively holding that box. And the horse has to find neutral in the middle of this invisible box that it's learned on the ground to find neutral in the middle on both sides. Now it has to do it simultaneously, but the rider is now much more consistent in setting it up. And then what we do is when the horse is no longer fighting with the invisible box, it knows how to go to the middle. The horse is then able to pay attention to the more subtle aids that we give in the mouth. So a horse's mouth is literally like a Formula One steering wheel. We can build lots of buttons into the horse's mouth corners. So for instance, we train Spanish walk in the mouth corners, hock flexions in the mouth corners, passage, piaf, it all comes from the mouth corners.
So how can people, I've been looking at your website, Adventures with Jenku. Yes. Is that your main website? I'll just put that in the chat now if people want to find more about you.
Very much. Yes. I took the other ones offline just so that we don't confuse people. So at the moment, Adventures with Jenku is our only website that's active. And then we also have a page on Facebook, Adventures with Jenku. And then YouTube, I would definitely like to encourage the viewers to go to YouTube and go and watch Adventures with Jenku on YouTube if you want to get a bit more of a sense of what it is that we do.
Super. There we go. And before we go, when do we think you're coming back to England? I know. There's no way of saying, but assuming that air travel starts again, when would you like to come back to England?
As soon as possible. If they said to me air travel is open and South Africa is no longer in lockdown, I would be there in 2 days.
Brilliant. I can't tell you how pleased I am to have had you on the show. Thank you so much. It's been absolutely fascinating. And thank you from everybody in England. And keep in contact on our Facebook page. If you've got any special courses, you promote yourself to death. It's all good. Always bob stuff on what you're doing, when you're coming. Let me know. I'll let people know. And again, thank you very much.
Thank you so much for this opportunity. I really appreciate it, Colin. You guys must have a fantastic day. And thank you for your podcast. This has been a privilege to be part of it.
Oh, it's been great fun. Thank you. I'm honored. Thanks. Excellent. See you later.
Thank you. Have a great day.
There we go. Take a look at Adventures with Jenku website. The website and the Facebook page. Look it up on YouTube as well. Obviously, since this interview came, I was like, I really need to find out exactly what he does and where he does it. And it's absolutely breathtaking. He does a really super good job. It's absolutely eye-opening. So get on with that. I'm very excited today. This week's got a very international flavour because tomorrow we're going to have another interview. Make sure that you're here for that. It's going to be with Bianca Stawalski, who is a co-contributor to my three-month online Ultimate Mountain Division Rider Confidence course. She does the self-assertiveness part of it. She's a horseback archer. She runs Werrida Wholeness and Wellness Center in Australia. She's a psychologist and just such a fount of information. And I'm really delighted. So we're going from South Africa today to Australia tomorrow. And make sure that you're here for that. I will put up reminders all day long. Thanks very much, everybody. I hope you enjoyed that and see you tomorrow. Bye.